Spent grain. Kind of what I feel like this morning, spent grain.
Really?
It's... I don't feel like I should feel like this, because it's like, okay, I stayed in last night. I didn't drink. I didn't, I read some books and went to bed and feel like spent grain this morning.
Well, as I told you, I'm working on very little sleep after some Boy Scout events that left me up for most of the night. So I'm on several cups of coffee at this point. So I'm with
you're
you, feeling
living,
spent.
You're living the scout life.
Oh, I am.
Yeah, scout life.
Mm-hmm.
You have a tattoo across your chest, scout life?
No. Definitely
not.
Well,
something you ought to consider. You should consider it.
Tattoos are not one of the 12 points of the scout law the last
time. Oh, isn't it?
No.
Not to mention it'd be like shaving a rug to get down to the skin.
Hey now. Speaking of presentation, let's talk about hop quality.
Okay. Awesome. Yes, let's do that.
Wow. That was a great transition there.
You like that? So smooth.
So you mentioned spent grains. We should talk about that. We've decided these little after shows that we put together should be called spent grains.
No. You decided.
Okay, I decided. But you didn't fight me on it too much.
I didn't think the way your email was like, oh, and by the way, this is what we're calling it. So, okay, I guess it is spent grains.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I did put it that
way,
didn't
I? I do like it. It's good.
I'm glad. For those of you not aware, the... You know the technical terms. You talk about it.
Spent grain. It's the grain that's left over. It's the malt, the actual grain left over after mashing in. So there it is. It's the stuff left over. Trub, sometimes people call it, but really trub is also the discharge out of the fermenter. But hey, spent grain. This is what's left afterwards. Mm-hmm. So there's still some maybe good morsels and nuggets in there, but it really is just mostly garbage.
It is. And speaking of garbage, it's time for a musical interlude.
Awesome. Yes. No poem today.
No poem.
But a song.
I have a song parody. I have a song. And
awesome.
I am not a singer.
Excellent.
Let's get that very, very straight here. So
yeah.
One of the things that we talked about in terms of hop quality is the fact that presentation is so important. And if mildew gets a hold of things, even if there's no problem with your product, you can have... brown hops or brownish hops.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yep.
With apologies to Van Morrison and Brown Eyed Girl.
Oh, God.
I call this brown moldy hops. And again, not a singer, so bear with me here. I feel like I need a background.
A background?
Yeah.
Do you need me to give it to hum a B flat for you? Or?
Here's a beat. Can you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, where did you go? When harvest day came, my hops are all ready. This bale here's in your name. Please don't go on a runnin', hey, hey, from my crop, isn't it something? I know you'll love the aroma if you can, just get past the look of it. My brown moldy hops. These are my brown moldy hops. Do you remember when we had that handshake contract? La, 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 la.
And I love how proud and upbeat you are about it,
well,
because that's exactly what it feels like.
It is. They're so good. They're just a little discolored.
They're just, oh. But look, I grew them. You have to take them. I can't not. Oh.
So if you didn't listen to that episode yet, that's really all you need to know right there. And and lawyers of Van Morrison, please, it was all in good fun. Leave us alone, please.
Yeah, I don't see them feeling the need to come after that.
No, because... we're not going to make a fortune off of him out of that little ditty?
Probably not. Mm. No. You gads. Well, thanks for the effort.
Sure.
If anybody's still listening, we would like to...
I will take some vocal lessons before I try that again, I promise.
Yeah, well, I do. We'll give you an A for effort.
Thank you.
Okay, so.
So that's the brown moldy hops story.
Brown moldy hops, yeah. Hop quality is what we're talking about in today's after show. And I just had the privilege of teaching advanced hop chemistry at Siebel this week. And we went in at length during one of our breaks talking about what quality is, and given we had just spoken about it in the main podcast, I had a lot of questions, and so I was just peppering these brewers. When we talk about quality, whether it's in their ingredients or in their beer, when they talk about quality, what does it mean? I would say, to my great satisfaction, when I start really pressing them about it, they really didn't have an answer. But yet everybody uses that term, quality.
Interesting.
It's the best quality. We use only quality ingredients. What the hell does that mean?
And I took some notes on our last talk, and one of the things I did write down here is that you can't, as a brewer, look at your grower and say, well, the quality's just not there. As you're saying, if you can't communicate to the grower what they're not doing correctly, what's not satisfying to you, then you have no right to say these aren't quality.
And it was because I'm sneaky like this, it was totally leading up to the next part of the class in the afternoon about how to rub hops and smell them. I call it, you know, how to huff hops. So I say, well, what is it like about hops when we talk about quality attributes? What are you looking for? Well, they got to smell good. What does that mean? I just taught you guys about aroma chemistry. What does that mean? Do you know what you're looking for? How do you determine if it smells good? Well, I just know. Bullshit. I totally called that out. So, and if you go to a grower and say, these do not meet my aroma requirements because they smell X, Y, and Z, that's the data. That's the info that they need. And how do you communicate that? Do you even know? Well, do you even know that I really love this hop because it smells, you know, so great? For instance, we had two samples of Cascade. They were from the same region, from the same harvest date, and we rubbed them, and one had a significant grassy overnotes, and the other one didn't. It's okay. It's Mother Nature's kitchen. But which one has more quality? Which one's of a higher quality? Some people who don't like the grassy notes said the other one was, and the people who didn't like the grassy notes, you know, back and forth. Just to say that, well, these aren't, you know, the quality's not there. What does that mean?
It, you know, and to your point about that, there's a difference between I know quality when I smell it and I know lack of quality when I smell it. You know what I mean? There, it sounds like folks know what smells wrong, but not necessarily what smells right.
And you know what? I'd say that for the common observer or common huffer, it's okay for that to be the end of the discussion.
All right.
To say, you know what? I like this, and it's fine, and I'm going to drink it, or I'm going to eat it, or whatever, and this is great. Ooh, I don't like this one, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to figure out why. Because it's really not that impactful for you to know. But for a brewer and a grower, it's absolutely critical. Especially if you're talking about these being quality attributes, but then saying, I can't tell you why it's not good, or I can't tell you why it is good. I just know. That's total baloney.
It is. It's not fair to your grower who's trying in earnest, we have to assume. Let's assume good intent. They're trying to give you a quality product. And if all they hear is, it's just not right, I mean, they're not looking for you to tell them how to fix it, because that's your job as the grower, but at least to give you the right insight on why they wouldn't buy yours and why they'd buy someone else's. That doesn't revolve around marketing or relationship or cost or timing. You know, what is it about the quality about this product? If my competitor handed it to you, would you say the same thing to them, that you wouldn't buy
right
from them, and why?
Or as a brewer, if you're talking to a... let's say a beer writer, and you give them beer and they taste it, and you know what that exchange is going to be like. They usually talk about the beer and, you know, the malty notes and the hoppy character and the mouthfeel and all that kind of stuff. Instead, you give them a beer and they just sniffed it and maybe took a sip, and they're like, meh, that's just not quality. Well, what the hell does that mean? Wouldn't you want to dig further? And it's the same conversation for hop growers. You can't just say, well, these just aren't up to quality standards. Well, what does that mean?
It's kind of the it's not me, it's you approach.
It's totally disingenuous just to leave it there. It's sort of like, you know, well, I wasn't ever going to buy hops from you anyway. So I'm just going to – I have the excuse of saying I'm not going to buy your hops because I don't trust you. I'm just going to say, well, that's not good enough quality, and that will end the conversation. I won't have to deal with you anymore.
I think as a if I were put in those shoes as the grower, I'd rather have the honest truth of, look, this is just not going to work between us. Otherwise, I'm going down the wrong path. I'm going to keep chasing you as a brewer,
yep,
as a customer, and I'm not going to fix anything. There's a term that I've heard used often when you train people, when you teach people things, and that phrase is feedback is a gift. And it's so true. Sometimes feedback is painful, but
yeah,
it is truly a gift for the person who is trying to perform a service or to build a product, to give back to them that important feedback to help them get better. Now, if they blanch at it and say, what the hell, man, you're wrong, well, then they're not accepting the gift gracefully.
No, and they're not. And frankly, as a brewer, is that going to be somebody you're going to go back to and deal with? Because they're going to be a giant pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just, I mean, as a business owner, I've always been, hey, just give me the straight dope. Yes, no, good, bad, just tell me, because otherwise I can't do anything about it if I don't know. Yeah, you know what? Emotional intelligence is great, and I appreciate it. But at the same time, you can't let that get in the way of improving a potential business relationship. You have to have those tough conversations, and that's part of running a business, is being able to accept, like you said, if you can be a gracious receiver, even if it's not the news you wanted to hear.
Yes, you take the feedback, and you don't have to agree with the feedback. If you hear the feedback more than once, okay, maybe there's some truth here I've got to investigate. I've got to learn a little more. But to your point, be gracious.
Yeah, be gracious. I mean, I could give you all kinds of feedback about your god-awful song, and just it really wasn't the quality I was looking for. But if you were a singer, you'd be like, well, what wasn't it? Was I off pitch? Was my tempo not good? Were the lyrics bad? And I'd say, well, yes, all of that. It's just really, really awful.
And this is why I don't run these things by James before we hit the record button. Because I want honest feedback.
Right. It's just like how you tell me I'm ugly and I really should shower more often.
Mm-hmm. I do. I say that right on a regular, yep, basis. I post it on social, mm-hmm, media.
Totally. One of the most painful things I've seen regarding quality is from the grower who really, truly does believe that they've produced, they've worked so hard and they put everything into a crop and it's just awful. And that they would be willing to present this to someone else in the industry as a representation of their effort. I would be embarrassed for them, because they were either completely oblivious or didn't give a shit, because they were bad. They're discolored. They smelled like burning tires. They had smelled like old cheese and sweat socks. They were red and damp in the middle, but yet they're like, here we go, here's my harvest, look how much I did, aren't I awesome? What, how? And you know, you're sort of baffled at how do you even respond to that. Where do you start? It's like, all right, so you're here, yeah, I understand you're happy, but I'm gonna kick you firmly in the jimmies here, because damn, yeah, you don't want to be a jerk about it, you could be, I guess it depends on whether I'm feeling scrappy or not. How do you communicate that in a way that is appropriate for the scenario? Now, this is like grower to grower talking. I'm not necessarily talking brewer to grower, because in a brewer to grower relationship or conversation, it's you're trying to sell them something.
Right.
And the brewer can say, nope, not going to take them. And end of story. So there's already sort of this yes or no kind of thing set up. But like when one grower is presenting to another grower, you know, a representation of their efforts and is looking for feedback, you're like, oh, balls, this is not going to go well.
Yeah, and it's so important that as an industry, you work together, because if you've got two hop farms side by side, and maybe you're competitors, you are, because you're side by side, you're both going after the same local brewers. If the brewer talks to farm A first and they have absolute crap, they're going to be so predisposed when they come over to farm B that, oh man, look, you know, I get all my stuff from the Pacific Northwest. They've got standards. They've got history. I don't think local guys can do this. A bad precedent has been set, even though they are not you. It's still part of that whole local cycle. and you need to work together and elevate the industry as a whole and help each other. It's right. actually a very good thing to help each other, even when you're competitors. You elevate everything that way.
It brings up a memory here of a few summers ago when a friend that I met via social media, a hop grower in Belgium, came to the States, and he came by Wisconsin because we built a rapport online, and he wanted to see, he saw some yards in Michigan and some in Ohio on his way through the Midwest, and he came to visit me. And I remember, you know, first time we actually met in person, we met at New Glarus, and we had a common friend in Dan Carey, and we left the brewery and, all right, let's go take a look at some hop yards. And I remember he looked at me and said, I'm really hoping that you can raise my opinion of hop growing in the Midwest.
Wow.
I'm like, oh yeah, wait, set the bar high. So, you know, I took him around to a couple. And then we went up to Bill's and central part of the state and showed him. And then he was like, wow, okay, you guys really know how to do it. Well, that was interesting. And so Bill and I were talking to him. We're asking, well, why do you have this perspective? What else do you see? And it was purely from that idea of, yeah, look, I've got 5-acre hop yard that this guy had been through, and look at how big my plants are, but maybe the cones were tiny, or they weren't, the weeds were just up to their, you know, forehead or things like that. But yet those growers were really proud of what they had produced. From the perspective of this guy from Belgium who'd been doing it for generations, he's just mortified. So when he said, oh yeah, you know, I'm looking for you to raise my, you know, raise the bar here for Midwest growers, I'm like, ooh, yeah, wait a minute. I don't like that, because it's totally a perspective thing for that comment. So why don't you explain your position a little bit more? And he did, which was great. But damn, you know, that was pretty brutal.
It is. It is. And this is someone who, even though they've, you know, it's a much larger farm than the ones you were probably taking him to see, although probably not versus Bill's.
His yard was probably as big as Bill's. So, I mean, you're talking 40 acres. So, you know, they're not massive farms in Europe, but they're traditional farms. So those folks, if you ask any of them, just they'll tell you they know exactly how to do it. So
according to them, according to them,
of course, well, it doesn't matter. What everybody else thinks is moot. Mm-hmm. So,
That is a shame that that's the perspective of you know, raise my awareness there. Hopefully you did.
Well, I think so. But I think it also highlighted something that we have talked about before, about this idea that a lot of these, quote, growers that he went to visit were hobbyists. Or they were trying to work themselves into the business. And so they just didn't have the resources or the effort or the interest. They thought what they were doing was adequate for what they were expecting to get out of their operation, which means to tell me, if they had weeds up to their eyeballs and, you know, downy mildew everywhere, that they weren't interested at all in being a yield producer or even a quote quality producer, because their cones are going to be brown. They're likely going to have a lot of variability in ripeness, which leads to a lot of variability in aroma content. But yet they felt that that was adequate for where they wanted to be in the industry. And then you go to somebody who's a commercial farmer, a commercial specialty crop farmer, who has the equipment and the resources and the know-how, it totally, like, two ends of the spectrum. So I thought that was interesting. And
it is. And I love how, I mean, the original podcast here on hop quality was really very scientific and technical in nature, but we've once again brought it back to a community conversation of working together and making sure that everyone looks out for each other in this industry, because we will succeed or fail together, especially when it comes to local growers. You need to partner with each other. You need to be honest with each other.
There's no need to be condescending. There's no need for what I call big hairy bullshit, which is all this chest pounding hyperbole. I'm not going to tell you a straight answer because there's an expectation. You know, for years I tried to get numbers, yield numbers out of growers in Michigan, and nobody would give me a damn number because it was like I was associating their low yield numbers with their manhood. I'm like, oh, why would I do that? I'm just trying to get information. It's like, you know, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And so I just started telling people what our yields were. And I still couldn't get responses back. I'm like, really? What the hell? How can we work together to raise the bar if you're not at all interested in sharing? So, or I'd get a response of, well, it's within, you know, industry norms. What does that mean? Industry norms where? You know, for Michigan, you guys don't have any industry norms. You haven't been doing it long enough.
So that's between zero and something, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I just, the hyperbole drives me nuts. Anyway, that's the title of the spent grain. The hyperbole drives James nuts.
That could work. Now, you did mention Dan Carey before, and this was the Hop Quality podcast was the Dan Carey Always Wears Pants podcast.
He does always wear pants. Yes, he does.
Have you double checked on that? Because you were going to do some research and make sure we were correct there.
Oh, that he always wears pants?
Well, that and that he was okay with us saying it.
Oh, yeah. I haven't gotten back to him yet. So I'm going to say go for it.
Well, if there's enough clamor for it out there, I will happily put out a ringtone of my Brown Moldy Hop song. All anyone has to do is ask.
You hear that? You hear all those crickets?
Yeah. Wow. That is quiet.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
No one. All right. I tried.
No one. Got nothing.
Nope.